Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. Today is a very special day. This is Elvis Presley, one of his epic concerts here. One of my favorite songs, My Way, and Elvis sings about the end.
The end is near, so I face the final curtain.
We're honored to have a lovely lady who was with Elvis for the last 9 months of his life up until the final curtain he's singing about there. And after 37 years, it was 37 years last month, August, that Elvis passed and went to heaven. And I get emotional thinking about it. I was 14. And my mother and my three brothers and sister and I were at the amusement park by our house riding the roller coaster and having this wonderful day, wonderful August day, and he announced over the loudspeaker Elvis had passed. And I mean, literally, people quit riding the rides. We were all crying. We all left the amusement park, Westview Park. And I think it was a couple months later, they did a TV special. I think it was on CBS showing one of his, you know, last concerts, and he introduced his girlfriend from the audience, and Ginger Alden stood up. And I remember my mother and I thought, oh, my God, she is so beautiful. And that was the first awareness I had of Ginger. And I always wondered what happened to her. And she's really conducted herself with a lot of class. She hasn't really said a lot these 37 years. So we're really grateful to have her on today. She just had her memoirs come out in the last couple days, Elvis and Ginger. I read this entire book cover to cover. Elvis and Ginger, Elvis Presley's fiance and last love, finally tells her story. You'll get a feel for it in the next 30 minutes here with Ginger, but go out and get the whole story to get, you know, the big picture of her journey. Welcome, Ginger. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. My pleasure.
I like how you started off talking about your son, because people have wondered what happened to you. Got married, I think, in the 90s and then had a son in 94, was it?
Yes. I got married in 91, had my son in 94.
And he came home from school and started talking about Elvis, huh?
Yes, he had, well, I wrote that his, you know, how odd for me that his due date was actually August 16th. And I said, God spared me the irony of having such a tragic event and happy event, you know, coincide on the same day. So my son was born 4 days late, and he arrived on August 20th. And, yeah, when he was about 7 years old, he jumped off the school bus. He had worn a pair of these huge plastic, you know, those fun, fake, oversized sunglasses, and he had worn them to school that morning. And when he jumped off the school bus, and he came running up to me, and he said, Mom, the kids on the bus are calling me Elvis. He goes, who's Elvis?
Oh,
and, you know, it hit me then. I hadn't talked about Elvis in a long time. And, you know, I told him he was a wonderful entertainer. He loved to make people happy, and you know, beautiful singer, and that satisfied him. But throughout the school year, I was just amazed that he started asking questions again about Elvis, and I knew it was prompted by the kids at school. And I thought, I was just amazed that these children at that age knew who Elvis was. And so, you know, I'm still fascinated. You know, I have people on Facebook writing to me, and they'll be 20 years old, and
mm-hmm.
I'm like, you know, he would be so happy to know that he's inspiring so many and still bringing such joy into their lives, you know, through his films and his music.
So your son turned 20 then last month, right?
Yes, and I had written down my memories shortly after Elvis passed away. That was my own personal thing to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to forget him. And not that he was forgettable by any means, but just the times and everything, even
mm-hmm.
down to what was said on occasions. And I moved on with my life. I worked. I got married. I had my son. And in the course of that time, there were fabrications and much hearsay and speculation regarding our relationship. But I chose to raise my son. I didn't want to lose time with him, and so I waited. He just turned 20 on August 20th, and when he went off to college, I sat down and put my memoirs together.
Well, I really respect that you did this yourself, too. You know, you could have got a ghostwriter and capitalized, you know, immediately on this.
but you did it in your own way, and it took me into the feelings that you were the age of your son when you met Elvis, right? You were 20, weren't you?
Yeah, I just turned 20. Yeah, I had no one
else. That was through your sister, Terry, was at one. Your sister Terry won a pageant, and Elvis met you and your sisters at the same time, invited you to Graceland.
Right, yeah. My sister was Miss Tennessee in 1976, and a good personal friend of Elvis's, George Klein, a local disc jockey, called up one night in our home and said, you know, Elvis was dating around, would like to meet the new Miss Tennessee. And my sister was, she was seeing someone at the time, and I was even seeing a young man, but we all happened to be home that night, and we were just blown away. I mean, my sister's a beautiful girl, but we were like, oh, my God, she's just going to get a chance to go inside Graceland and shake Elvis's hand, and you know, how wonderful. And then my older sister suggested maybe, you know, Ginger and I can go with you, to my sister Terry, and she was all for that. She was nervous about going, so the three of us were able to go there that night, and only thinking, I mean, to actually date Elvis was only in the movies. That was just something too unimaginable. So we went there that evening in November of 1976, just thinking, we're finally going to see inside Graceland, which was like the White House to us growing up in Memphis, and you know, shake Elvis's hand, say hi to him, and go home and tell our friends. Mm. And things changed, though. It didn't work out. Thankfully.
Yeah. Well, you give this incredible metaphor to me, because it really captured the feeling of your story. You know, I was thinking as a filmmaker myself, that's the whole metaphor to get a handle on this story if you ever make it into a film. You said that you felt like Alice in Wonderland going through the looking glass into a whole different world.
Oh, when that door opened, you know, it's thinking back on that first night. I mean, Elvis, I thought, this is Elvis's home. He's going to open his front door and say hi, you know. And I was always a little concerned because my sister Rosemary and I hadn't really been invited, so I was kind of hanging back, and my sister was brave, and my sister Rosemary rang the doorbell, but his friend George Klein opened the door, and, you know, we ended up having to wait a little while. Elvis was upstairs practicing karate, according to George, and but when I stepped in that door, I was like, wow, you know, I mean, the house looked different than the way it's been redecorated now, and there was plush red carpeting and French provincial furniture, and, you know, it was quite the sight.
And it, you know, it's interesting because you came as this group, kind of watching out for each other almost in a way, and yet there was this chemistry with you and Elvis in the eyes when he said right away, like, what did he say, you're boring a hole in me or something like that.
Burning a hole for him. I mean, it, you know, we eventually had to wait a while, and we were taken on a tour by George through the downstairs area, and then when George said, well, we're going to go upstairs now into Lisa's room, and I was just flabbergasted. I thought, I never expected to go upstairs. I thought we'd maybe meet him in the living room or something. And we go upstairs, and we're waiting in the living room, and we're chatting with George and a couple of other people, and Elvis just comes walking in. And I joked and said, you know, I thought trumpets would sound at his entrance. It you know, he was dressed just casually, had been working out a little bit, had on a karate little blue top, black pants, karate suit. Right away, and I was extremely, extremely shy then. I was normally very quiet, and I just blurted out, hi, Elvis, like I'd known him for years. And we sat down, and, you know, I was starting to feel a little more comfortable. He was very much a gentleman, you know, entertaining, fun, and all of a sudden he tilted his head, and he looked at me, and he said, Ginger, you're burning a hole right through me. And I remember going, who, me? And he goes, yes, you. And I was embarrassed. I thought he thought I was just staring at him, you know. And I thought, well, we were looking at him, but, you know, I thought, did I look strange, you know, all of a sudden? I was just, you know, I felt my face turn red. And but he was singling me out, and I wasn't, you know, quite picking up on it at the time, but there were little things that, you know, he was doing before I ended up being alone with him later that evening.
The chemistry that you had together, it really struck me, because sometimes people buy the personality the media shows and not the person, and, you know, he's the biggest sex symbol in the world as a singer and everything. But what was really interesting to me about the relationship as it developed was, you know, that he was a gentleman, that a lot of your time together was around the spiritual books, and, you know, he went over to your mother's and would have Bible discussions.
Right.
I think your grandpa was an Assembly of God preacher, and you guys were reading books about and talking about all these different spiritual things. So it wasn't like sex symbol type thing like people would think. This was a connection on a lot of levels, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and you know, I mean, the books he was studying were a lot of Eastern philosophy. It wasn't the easiest by any means. You know, Elvis had been studying this since the 1960s, but it was intriguing. It was fascinating. I knew it was important to him, and I tried to understand. I felt in time I could grasp it a little bit at a time, but I was happy to sit and read with him, and you know, my family was musical. My mother played mandolin, she played guitar, she played piano, and you know, many times when I was young, she would play a lot of gospel songs on our piano, and I loved singing, so I would come stand behind her and sing some songs, and my sister was a great classical pianist, so I appreciated it. You know, it was special moments when Elvis would sit at the organ in his office and play play for me and sing.
Yeah, the gospel stuff he did, I wasn't super familiar with the old gospel stuff myself until that concert show after he passed, and they showed him doing How Great Thou Art. And I remember my mother and I know he won Grammys for the gospel stuff, but for whatever reason growing up, I was real into the rock and roll and the Hound Dog and those hits, and I wasn't as exposed to the gospel stuff, but I remember he did How Great Thou Art. And I remember just crying, just getting overwhelmed, and I was 14. Oh my God!
Sang those with such power and such beauty. He put his heart and soul into those, and gospel was, I say, so deep rooted in his soul. And you know, early Sunday mornings, he loved to watch the singers on some of the gospel shows in Memphis. And you know, but he loved a good comedy too. You know, we'd be upstairs laughing. He loved shows like Barney Miller and What's Happening, and he loved the famous Monty Python films, and of course everyone knows Peter Sellers, so he got a big kick out of those. He introduced me to those, and they became some of my favorite films.
Yeah, his humor comes through in the story when your grandpa passed, and he moved heaven and earth to get you guys there for the funeral.
Yeah,
that was quite a story.
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, sometimes Elvis, was a deeply caring man, but he could use a little dark humor in the face of of a sad time. And when we were at my grandfather's funeral, it took place in a tiny church in Jasper, Arkansas, up on a mountain top, and we were sitting there, and Elvis leaned my way and said, "Son, you're on your own." And it was kind of like this final thing. I think he was referring to my grandfather, but it was, I said, in some strange, weird way, it lightened the moment for a second, but that was his way of dealing, a little dark time, trying to put a little humor in it.
Yeah, I think it was the line from Blazing Saddles.
Exactly. That's what I thought of the minute he said it, and I was like, wow. But he was a wonderful, wonderful, caring man, and that trip, to make sure that I made it to my grandfather's funeral was, and the fact he even wanted to go with me blew me away, because we had just come back from a tour, and I remember saying, "Aren't you tired?" And he goes, "No, I'd really like to be there." And the fact that I had his support and showed how much he cared, and it's one of my most endearing memories.
Yeah, and speaking of How Great Thou Art, I was visualizing the scene. You described it really well in this small Assembly of God church. I think there was only a few benches. It sounds like very small set, small place. And as the preacher began singing, I think it was How Great Thou Art, but Elvis joins in, kind of really lifting up the singing. And I'm thinking, oh my God, in a funeral, can you imagine Elvis's voice joining in the hymn? I mean,
yeah, it surprised me. He didn't try to take over, because the minister was a little nervous. And Elvis slowly, or just softly began to sing along with him. And he kind of nodded at him. And the guy, the minister, started, his voice got a little stronger. And Charlie Hodge was accompanying him a little bit in harmony. It was a nice, nice moment.
The emotions, too, I felt reading your book. And by the way, those of you listening, the book did just come out. Anywhere books are sold, I'm sure you can get this, Amazon or bookstores, Elvis and Ginger, Ginger Alden, Elvis Presley's fiancée and last love, finally tells her story. And the emotions I felt, Ginger, on that, leading up to his passing, he's talking in great detail about the wedding. And for a while he was saying to you, "God will tell me when we're supposed to get married, huh?" So you were kind of maybe in limbo, like, okay, tell him, when are you going to tell him, God? And then he tells you, I think we should do this for a gift to God, get married on Christmas.
Well, you know, I wanted this to be so right. I wanted Elvis to be sure. You know, I loved him with all my heart. I fell very quickly. He became, you know, I just became consumed with Elvis. I was on this roll with him and in this whole new world. And but he would say that a lot throughout our relationship. You know, God will come through and tell me when the time is right. And you know, and I thought, okay, you know, this is fine. I want it to be right. And you know, you and I never mentioned it. I always thought, I hope that didn't bother him. I hope he didn't think I didn't want to. But you know, I left it up to him.
Yeah, that was, I think, really wise because, you know, he's a person who everybody in his orbit is, you know, practically pressuring him or wanting something. And, you know, you exhibited a lot of class and restraint. And I'm amazed you were only 20, 21 years old, you know, just thrust into this situation. In fact, you know, you mentioned that you and Elvis like to read the book, The Prophet. That's one of my favorite books, too.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought about a section of the book, and I wanted to ask you about this feeling. You get into it towards the end of your book, but in The Prophet it says, let there be space in your togetherness, let the winds of the heaven dance between you. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about, stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart. The oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow.
Right.
And the feeling I had for a lot of the book was that he was so, you describe him as a supernova, and you're 20, 21 years old. Even though this happened 37 years ago, it feels so present reading the book that I was, like, worried for you. Oh, my God, this woman is getting consumed in his shadow. You know, there's one point where you meet him on tour and you're at a hotel mm-hmm. all day and you have an aide and you don't know what to do. You don't know that you can just call room service or he's pretty much controlling or wanting you there all the time. And I thought it was nice towards the end that he began to recognize, you know, your personhood. Like, you like art. Okay, we're going to set up a place for you to do your painting. And, you know, starting to give you that. But did you struggle to not lose yourself in him like so many people did?
Well, you know, I think in the beginning, I loved art. I was decorating windows part-time in a little dress shop, and I, you know, just stopped and was going to be with Elvis now and helping and taking care of him and going on tour. But, you know, at a point, I did, you know, I wrote about my parents didn't have an overly great relationship. They hadn't had it for a few years. And so I had a lot of stuff going on in my house, too. And trying to handle all of that at the same time. And there was a tour that I ended up leaving at a point in the book, not on my own choice, but there was a lot of stuff that hit me at one time. And like I said, you know, I didn't want to get lost. I knew I had loved art. And I would bring it up to Elvis. And I do think, like you said, at the end, the night that before he died, he said he wanted to build an art studio for me by his racquetball court. And I thought, you know, I felt like I was getting through to him, you know, in a way, in that, and he was respecting that, which I thought was wonderful. And, yeah, you know, there were times, I mean, it was easy to be consumed with it, but I understood, you know, it took me a little while. When I left that tour and he had me to come back, I understood the pressures on him and what he was going through. And, and I was on, you know, I was at almost every one of his shows except maybe four or five.
Hmm. Yeah, it was such a happy feeling right before he passed, talking about the wedding and, you know, okay, Ginger, get a paper and a pencil and start writing out the guests of who you would like to invite. And there was such a good feeling right before he passed. And then it took me from that high of that good feeling, even though I know where it's going, it was such a happy, it seemed like a, And you've dealt with a lot of mischaracterizations, because I think the narrative that's out there and that has been out there is that the last, you know, period of his life, that he was just, you know, fat, depressed, in bad shape. The whole, you know, the whole book, the bodyguards wrote that he was just a mess. And you don't shy away from the fact that he was, you know, taking medications to sleep and was having problems you were concerned about. But the thing about your book is it fleshes out that there were a lot of really happy times in that final year, your trip to Hawaii, and it
exactly.
wasn't all dark.
you know, Richard, that's what got lost somewhere in the shuffle. You know, I've never read the Bodyguard book. I said it. I knew it had wounded him, and that was reason enough not to read it. But my experience, you know, in which I've heard one of those bodyguards mention, it was sensationalized, you know, in areas. And I did write about Elvis having a dependency on sleep medication, and on occasion it caused some mood swings and some events that happened between the two of us because of it. And I think I challenged Elvis a few times with that, because I loved him dearly, and I did want to help him, you know, choose a healthier eating style at times, or healthier, you know, thinking, you know, wow, it'd just be so great if he could go to sleep without needing some medication like this. And I do think because of that medication, it caused a different personality to appear on occasion, and mm-hmm. caused some events that happened. But that wasn't who Elvis was 98% of the time, but I felt I needed to be truthful and write about the events so that people could see what it was like for me and how I did try to help him. And, there's so many myths that I hated touring, and my family was always tagging along. And that those are just lies. That's not true at all. I mean, Elvis loved my family, and I wrote about the reason he wanted my mother to come on tour. He was talking to her about marital problems, and Elvis was just cared so much for other people's feelings and had great concern from fans to family, everyone, and he genuinely took on my family as part of his own. And even when one of my sisters couldn't join a tour one time, he wasn't happy about it. He sent a plane mm-hmm. for she and her friend. He said, bring your girlfriend. He sent an extra plane so that they could come and see his shows. And, the touring was fascinating to me. You know, we were going from city to city. I mean, it may not have been easy all the time, but it was fine. I never once told Elvis I don't want to tour, or any friends, anybody around him. But somehow that myth got out there, so I wanted to clear that up.
Yeah, it's hard when people hear the untruths, because sometimes the first thing they hear, even if it's false, you know, is what's lodged in their minds. And so you've had a lot of class to wait this long and to take your time and tell the truth when you're ready. And a lot of people were interested too that Elvis talked about wanting to have a son and have children and marry and have children with you.
And that was a big, you know, Richard, another thing, you know, people think he's sitting up and he's depressed, like you described. He's sitting up in his room and he's talking about his mom all the time. And I thought, that's not the person I fell in love with. That's not who Elvis was 98, you know, percent of the time. I mean, you know, upstairs in his room, upstairs was his sanctuary. His grandmother lived downstairs. His aunt, you know, he took care of so many people. You know, cousins worked for him, stepbrothers. But it was like his little sanctuary, you know. He had his organ, his office, his daughter's room. And I think that probably came from living on the road, too, you know. But he felt comfortable up there. He could be himself and, you know, sit around in his pajamas. And there was but there were many happy times. We watched television. He played the organ quite often for me and sang. And, so that image is just, sure not the person that I saw the last 9 months.
You wrote this beautiful poem, and by the way, when you all listening get this book, Elvis and Ginger, she has some photos and also pictures of notes and things. And in your own handwriting, you put this poem. Is it okay to read this poem?
Sure.
You know the one
sure.
you wrote? Would you like to read it, or could I read part of it? Or
I'll let you read it.
Okay. This is about, right? You wrote this not long after Elvis passed.
Yeah.
It says, I thank our God for choosing me to share a part of your life. Though our time together was very short, I would soon have been your wife. I treasure every moment we've been together. I'll always remember your ways. I only wish I could have met you sooner while you were singing in your earlier days. But God must have planned it all along and chose the time for us to meet. Maybe we both had to learn about life so that we could fill each other's needs. If the moment ever comes I can see you once again, I'll walk up very gingerly and gently take your hand. I'll look deep into your eyes. No words will need to be spoken. Though we'll have been apart for quite some time, our bond of love will never have been broken. I'll gaze at you so proudly, thinking of all that's left undone. We can start from the beginning, for our lives will have just begun. And then I'll say a prayer to our God and thank him once again for giving me eternal life with my love and my best friend. Beautiful.
I'm glad you read it.
Wow. That would have been hard for you to read, probably, huh?
Yes, yes.
I was struggling to get through it emotionally. And I mean, it's just so powerful. There was that feeling that even when he died, you talk about at the funeral, I think Charlie Hodge came up to you when you were looking at the casket and said, he's still here, Ginger, he's on another plane. And that poem kind of captures that.
I believe this was at the wake. Charlie was standing at the head of the casket, and when I went up, you know, he said, Ginger, he hasn't gone anywhere, he's just on another plane. And that's when I said, you know, I was like, where are you, Elvis? And I said, I could hear this little voice in the back of my head, you know, saying, son, you're on your own, you know, what he said at my grandfather's funeral. It was a very, very sad day, and still unbelievable this day, you know, that it happened.
Yeah,
we missed a lot of good stuff. We missed seeing him do new films that he wanted to do, and singing more gospel, and which I know he would undoubtedly be doing to this very day, and maybe producing films, and it's just a shame that we didn't get to see where else he would go, and that you know I didn't get to go there with him.
Do you have? I know there's so many, but do you, what would be some of the songs that are your favorites that he did?
It's funny. One of my favorites was "Trying to Get to You."
When he sang that,
I don't know why. I thought of our 22-year age difference, which didn't really mean a thing to me. And in the song, it said there were many miles between us, and I kind of related that to us, but it didn't mean a thing. That was one of my favorites. Many, a lot of the gospel, like you said, How Great Thou Art, If I Can Dream, you know, I mean, these beautiful, beautiful, there's too many, you know, it's hard to narrow down one with him.
It's interesting in the book because you give us a feeling of how you looked at the songs, like Trying to Get to You, There Are Many Miles Between Us, But They Didn't Mean a Thing, and that how you viewed that as the years between you. And another song you mentioned that, quite frankly, it wasn't like on the top of my consciousness. I think it's one I didn't know as much, but you mentioned that song Softly, I Leave You, and the story told you about that. And I thought, wow, that really applies to you two, really, now.
I've thought of that, and Unchained Melody was another beautiful, beautiful one that he would sing. Softly I Must Leave You was a song that was powerful to him, and he had, you know, obviously before I met him, he had talked about it in numerous shows, about a man who lays dying and he doesn't want to wake his wife. He knows he's going to die, so he writes this letter to her. And Elvis performed that many, many times, you know, in a lot of shows, but when I was first on tour and went to his last Las Vegas engagement in December of 76, he played a Charles Boyer singing, you know, this song, and he would play that album for me quite a few times while we were there. But he would also repeat it in this Charles Boyer voice, and having Elvis do that was like magical.
Yeah, he like you said, he didn't want to wake her. He wanted to just softly leave, so she wouldn't have to see him die. And I thought about how when he left you before he died, you said, now don't fall asleep in there. But yet, like that song, he left the room with you. He wasn't with you. And there's just a lot of subtext to that.
It was a day that none of us expected, and it was such a shock and just a tragic, devastating day.
Yeah, it really was. Well, I want to thank you so much for giving of yourself to write this book, and Elvis and Ginger.
I appreciate Elvis, it, Richard.
Elvis and Ginger is such a great book. It took me through the feeling of being, a first-person eyewitness, really.
I hope that people will walk away with a much better understanding of our relationship, and, you know, to hear it straight from me and true of, you know, events of what happened, even on the day he passed, and, you know, there's been so many things wrong out there. But I hope his fans, they've been so loving, and just remember his wonderful charitable contributions, his beautiful voice, and his huge concern for other people's welfare. You know, I don't think in our lifetime we'll see another person like him, if ever.
Yeah, I don't think so either, Ginger. And I want to thank you. You did a wonderful job, and even today here in this 30 minutes, letting us get a feeling. There's so much more, you know, they're giving me a sign that we're out of time, but there's so much more in this book, and we've hit a few of the points, but there's just so much more. So I encourage you all to get this book, Elvis and Ginger, and you know, there's no substitute for just reading it, because we've skimmed the surface of a really powerful, powerful read. Well, God bless you and your husband and your son, and I really enjoyed chatting with you, Ginger.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate it.
And God bless all of you for listening. I think we'll maybe go out with an Elvis song here.
And I think he did it his way. Elvis did it his way. So let me cue up here my way. And I'm kind of emotional after this interview because it's bringing back some of the feelings that I had when I heard the news at 14 years old. And we were a musical family. We went around performing and played in the bars and clubs with my parents, and we did a lot of these Elvis songs. And so let me leave you with one that was one of our favorites, and I think it describes the way that Elvis lived his life.
Let me do a song that's one of our favorites to call My Way.
And now the end is near, so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every byway, oh and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, oh, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. My share of losing, and now tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way.
Thank you.